SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in hour number two of the early hot. Look, timing is everything. Timing is everything. And I just needed 30 more seconds and I'd have been fine. I didn't get it. It's Donnie's fault. It looks like I just laughed straight through the break at the same subject. I didn't. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside, we're here with you. Little baseball preview. Donnie, you ready to knock it out of the park?
I mean, I'm ready to knock. Just looking to knock it out of the park or knock somebody's head off. Say, you know, one thing of difference. By the way, I mean, don't go out. Look, hey, look, we're going to talk Major League Baseball. I did this. Kevin's probably done it a few times, proposing to somebody, get them to say yes. Mine said yes. Kevin's haven't said yes yet. But my goodness, don't do it on the field. Like, yeah, what is the deal here, Kevin? I mean, can we at least bring that up real quick? Dodgers game.
Sure. Let's
propose to your girlfriend, but not near your girlfriend. Uh-huh. Like, who thought of that one?
Well, I haven't seen the full video, but I'm pretty sure if you're going to do a proposal, you got to be near the person. Were they not near the person?
Let me play it out for you here, Kevin. I sit out in the outfield bleacher seats. I'm probably sitting next to my significant other. I'm going to propose to my significant other, but instead of doing it like in the seats where everybody like circles around and the cameras come around, I run onto the field in the middle of the outfield and take one knee and look at my girlfriend in the bleachers and then get Brian Dawkins laced / Ray Lewis in the middle of the field. I hope they found the ring, and I hope the girl said no.
You know what? It probably would be. She might have been leaning yes, and then the odds, if they had live odds on her answer, they shifted when he jumped onto the field and then got himself
knocked
out.
I don't even think that guy remembers it now. He's wake up the next day like, hey, what was the proposal? What do you mean proposal? Well, I don't remember anything about last night. That's how good that is.
That's a tough scene.
Man.
That's an ugly scene there. All right. Yeah, there you go. There's your field proposal breakdown there, which also involved me getting a real unnecessary shot taken my way, which we didn't love to see there. Shall we, Donnie, though? A little Major League Baseball here. Shout out to the teams that didn't need a day off. After being exhausted from opening day. Mets, Marlins. Mets are favored again. -120 on the road. Total here, 7.5. Peterson, Lizardo. It's certainly not how you draw it up for the Mets. Day number two, Peterson has the ball, but that's exactly what we have.
Yeah, by the way, Mets, obviously, pretty good ball club here. We take a look at the Marlins, young and still trying to find their way. So you just take a look at the starting lineups or the anticipated starting lineups. It's much better for the Mets side. And also, Kevin, keep in mind, we don't have any real statistics to go off of here in the 2023 season. So you try to sort of backtrack the last year and what actually worked. The one thing that did work out, how about this, Kevin? For the New York Mets here against left-handed pitching, they did very well. And if we're just looking at the anticipated starting lineup today of those nine guys, how about this? Eight of those guys with elevated weighted on base percentages against left-handed pitching, that's got to help you out there. So even when you look at that heart of the order, which you know me in the beginning of the season, trying to have some fun, maybe RBI opportunities, Starlin Marte, 366 weighted on base average in 2022 against left-handed pitching, Francisco Lindor, 343, Pete Alonso, 358. So you're going to get a pretty good look all the way through that lineup, and even looks like the anticipated leadoff batter will be Nimmo at 345 based on his statistics last year against lefties. Slightly better opponent here, the Mets are, than the Marlins. I think that's the way to go in this one. And if you're looking for RBI props, maybe the heart of that order does make some sense. Better lineup here for the Mets early, and they're not an expensive price where you're laying like 180, 190 at this point. I think they're the better way to go today. I do.
I'm interested in a guy like Lizardo, who was a really high-level prospect that came over from the Athletics. His first year in Miami was disastrous. Last year was his best season of his career. And could this be a guy that we end up looking at a month from now or 2 months from now, saying, you know what, this is actually a trustworthy guy in the rotation and being worthy of the number two for behind Sandy here in Miami. Radio audience is live again on a Friday morning. The early lines here is XM Channel 159. A lot of NBA preview coming your way at 8:40. We talk about the college basketball games as well live here on the show. Astros and White Sox, Houston -162. I could very well see people today saying, yeah, they're not starting 0-2 and betting on the Astros.
Now, Javier is very good. He was sensational in 2022 and going up against a lineup that didn't do all that well, Kevin, against right-handed pitching. But if we're flipping it over and taking a look at Lance Lynn, decent pitcher, Kevin. Last year, going up against left-handed batters, 297, weighted on base percentage against righties, 290. Really handled his business in a strikeout percentage right around 25%. If we're looking in the middle of that order for the Astros, that's where you want to land. Bregman, last year against right-handed pitching, Kevin, a 229 ISO power number and a 369 weighted on base percentage. Right behind him is anticipated to be your Jordan Alvarez, a 313 ISO power number and a 404 weighted on base percentage against righties. And also, if you slide it down, Abreu and Tucker also good weighted on base percentages against right-handed pitching from last year. So if you're looking for them not to start 0-2, a little bit of a correlation, Kevin. The first 4 to 5 guys in that lineup should be able to hit for the Astros, and that's probably where I'm hunting tonight.
And maybe as well, then even Jordan and Bregman, 2+ bags. Alvarez, that's 500 in his career against Lance Lynn. Alex Bregman, 6 of 17. 4 of those hits were for extra bases, a double, a triple, and a pair of home runs in his career against Lance Lynn. We've got the Padres and the Rockies. We've got the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. Those two teams, those two games, which one are you more interested in?
Yeah, by the way, take a look here. Freeland, left-handed pitcher, struggled last year with over an xFIP of 5. Couldn't get left-handed batters out. But if you take a look at the lineups here, not a lot of strikeouts from Freeman last year. If you look at the left-handed percentages here for the San Diego Padres, they didn't strike out basically at all against left-handed pitching. They need a big bounce back tonight, and maybe they do get it.
A little West Coast parlay there. If you want the two big favorites, it's +128. Yep. Could that work out, or is that still a little too dangerous there? Merrill Kelly, Donnie, coming off of a big WBC, though. Might have a lot of momentum heading into this game here. We shall see. Let's talk about the NBA. We've got Embiid in action. I think we're going to have Jokic in action as well. That's coming up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Shall we? Little NBA. A lot of NBA action. It's a really strong Friday in the association. And we've got ourselves both MVP candidates likely in action, but I got to stop all that right there. Why are you smiling back there? People don't see this stuff behind the scenes. What's the deal?
I don't know. Some people saying too much NBA, K-Dub. Is that the truth? I don't know. Maybe it is.
Hold on. Let me hear me. Kevin, that's too much LeBron. Cut it out. All right. Producer's words. Producer's words. We won't do any LeBron in this segment. You've got
not my
word.
Segment.
Next segment,
though. I didn't write this segment up. Sure.
I don't even do the gimmick anymore. Look, the two MVPs are in action here, the Sixers and the Raptors. We can get to the side, we can get to the total. It all starts with Joel Embiid. Points prop 32.5. So I just went through and looked at Embiid's full season. Do you know how many times Joel Embiid has now gone back-to-back games without scoring 30 points? This is the third time this season that Embiid has gone back-to-back without 30. Do you know how ridiculous that is? Do you know how absurd it is that you don't go, you can't have two game streaks of not scoring 30-plus? Now, limited sample size, but Embiid's the third game in the first two, we didn't get to 30. He played a Spurs team, went out for 40 and 13, and then he played a Clippers team and went for 44 points. Donnie? Narrative style, it's got to be Joel Embiid over 32.5 with two straight games not getting over his typical numbers.
And also, he's getting a lot of these good vibes. We can't say this enough. When you're sitting here looking at an NBA player and you want him to do damage, what you expect him to do, it's Joel Embiid reading the tea leaves here. I have a legitimate chance now, even after missing a game against the Denver Nuggets, when most people thought I can't win the award now because I sat that game out. He knows he's the favorite right now. He knows that straw pool up there is still in that 50-50 range. He knows that the Philadelphia 76ers, including James Harden, if he is healthy tonight, looks like he's anticipated to once again play, will get him easy buckets. And I always use that same moniker. Joel Embiid's not shooting 13 or 14 times tonight. He's going to be into 20s, which means you would probably be a fool to go under that number. But having a look at the game overall, Kevin, the Philadelphia 76ers now here at the FanDuel Sportsbook up to 6-point favorites against Toronto. So I ask this question. Correlation here, if Embiid has a big night, do you think the Sixers win? Probably so. But there's a chance here that Embiid has a big night and the Sixers lose. You say, well, Donnie, the Sixers are so good at home. Why would you go against them now? They need this win every bit as much as Toronto. Do they actually, Kevin? No, maybe if you had the Celtics take a loss last night, which they didn't against the Bucks, the Sixers go, ooh, maybe a little feeding frenzy here. If we play really well, we might be able to overtake the Celtics. I don't think that's going to be the case. But look at the Toronto Raptors here. You know how important it is, Kevin, as you know, to be in that 7-8 hole as opposed to that 8-9 hole, which they're fighting in right now? Toronto really needs this game. Not saying Toronto comes into Philadelphia and wins this game. I'm just saying 6 points might be a lot as I look for a close game, but also, Joel Embiid is going to have a big night. I'm not the guy that's going to say, 25 points, 9 rebounds again. No, he knows he needs to be in the 30s and really shift that focus back to him in the MVP race.
Yeah, look, I think your Raptor points are well taken here. This is a team that is competing for that. We talk way more about the West, the back end of the West, because mm-hmm. it feels like there are teams involved that their expectations are way different, right? Golden State, Dallas, and the Lakers are three teams that highlight that West play-in. The East has a lot of madness, but how many teams are you talking about in terms of winning the Eastern Conference? Maybe you'd hear Miami, nobody else. That's why we don't talk about the Eastern Conference play-in race, but you're right. Toronto absolutely is going to have to try and get in the mix, and they are playing a little bit of some better basketball now, right? They found themselves winners of three in a row. They've actually gone out there and covered 7 of their last 8 basketball games. So, and we know Toronto's tough. I'll tell you this, as somebody that probably gets involved on the Embiid prop because of what we talked about, I wish this wasn't Toronto, right? When you think about, I wish this was not Toronto or Miami. If we could have avoided, of all the other, 29 teams that they could have played tonight, the Sixers, this is one of the two least options I would have preferred here, but it's what we have with the Sixers and the Raptors. Let's get to the Jokic game. Now, line reading, you have an 8.5-point spread. Mm. Am I wrong? Jokic is out tonight, Donnie? Is that the read here?
It should be the read because if I'm looking right now at the numbers, the FanDuel Sportsbook, Kevin, opened up at 6. So it wasn't like the FanDuel Sportsbook had a number that was 10 and it's now down to 8.5 because they think Jokic is playing. This number is rising. And typically when the MVP returns and is healthy and rested, how does that number change that much? You might be on to something here, which would be kind of wild here. Are they just going to throw in the towel against the Suns tonight? Maybe so, but that line, if we're just line reading, Stone Cold Suns line right there, Kevin.
If Jokic is out, do you have anticipated starting lineups? And look, I know those are tricky, right? It's folks, it's not even 8:20 in the morning yet, right? Like we are 14 hours away from this game being close to tip here, but he's in the anticipated starting lineup?
Brown, KCP, Porter Jr., Gordon, and Jokic anticipated to be in the lineup tonight.
You know what? Let me do a double check here and see if they have the official word out in terms of Jokic in this game. There's no official word that anticipated starting lineup has him in. I think they've already said Jamal Murray's not going to play.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Fully healthy, Durant plays, Jokic plays, Jamal Murray, the whole deal. What would you think a Phoenix-Denver line would be in Phoenix? Now, second leg of a back-to-back, rest disadvantage here. Would that be Phoenix minus
4.5? 4.5 maximum?
4.5?
You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like saying, like, if Jokic plays in this game and they're getting 8.5, like, you do scratch your head and go, now, hold on here. Like, I understand it is a back-to-back, but you're talking about the number one overall seed with their MVP who's probably healthy and just got a rest advantage from the night before. That is a heavy line to lay out, maybe an indicator of what we're really going to anticipate in the playoffs out of the Suns.
Yes. Again, the Suns are the favorites in the West, right? We shouldn't lose sight of that. This is kind of supposed to be their deal. So I think that's relevant. We don't have Durant props up. Interested in Durant numbers. Now, the books are going to raise them, but if we get low 20s again, Donnie, after a 5 of 18 game, I think you'll agree here. I'll be interested in KD.
Yes, just don't post him at that 26.5. You put him south of 25 points. He's going to play. He played 29 minutes in the last game he played, so we anticipate him playing around that level. And if you're telling me 18 shots again, he's going to get that. Yes, give me something south of 25, and I would be all over Durant props.
To then take this back to the MVP race, if Jokic misses this game, It's not, it can't be over, but it doesn't help, right?
And Embiid goes for 35 plus and the Sixers win and the Nuggets get blown out back-to-back nights. Yeah, that might be all you needed to know.
Like, the conversation obviously was starting to shift when Embiid missed that game Monday. Now, he missed the head-to-head. But in terms of games missed, right, all of a sudden it's like, is Jokic – how many games does Jokic have left? All of a sudden, for me, feels like a question. Like, is Jokic done playing road basketball or something for some reason here? What, like, I don't really know. Is Jokic going to only play, like, two more games the rest of the way, Donnie? Could that be the approach here from the Nuggets? Like, they're going to, at some point, try and clinch the one seed and then let's just shut the whole story down?
Which is really odd because, again, Kevin, we talk about Joel Embiid trying to win that first MVP. Jokic is trying to do something historic by going back to back to back. And if the Nuggets go, yeah, well, he's healthy, we don't really care about that, just get to the playoffs. Well, Jokic might play the right card to the press and say, yeah, it's all about winning championships. I get it. But deep down, he's like, no, you can't be sitting me because I'm healthy at this point. I have a legitimate chance to take this MVP down where maybe one big triple-double gets it for me.
And by the way, to your point, Jokic goes out there tonight by himself for the most part
and wins
and gets one in Phoenix off Durant. Whoa, odds go the other way. Odds go the other way. Because those are the opportunities that these guys need. Jokic having two back-to-back primetime games and punting both. It's interesting stuff. It really is. There's still a lot more on this NBA slate to get to. Now I can talk about LeBron. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Keep it right here with you on the early line. Continue to talk about tonight's NBA slate. From a seeding perspective, your biggest game, that is the one between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll break this down in its entirety, but we start by giving the people a look at a same-game parlay. Kenny Omega style, brooms were out yesterday. Sweep, sweep, sweep. Double up here from the fellas. We almost had the 8-1 2 days ago. That's all right. We bounced back. Sweep yesterday. The Boston Celtics helped the people get paid. Now, I can't believe it, but for the first time, literally, for the first time ever in the history of the same game parlay segment, the odds for yours is not plus 143. It's close, though. Talk to the people here. T-Wolves Lakers.
Yeah, you ruined my bit there, so I go with this one. Congratulations, Kevin, for finally hitting a same-game parlay here at the FanDuel Sportsbook yesterday on the show. I was carrying all the weight the entire way through since Kevin ruined what I was actually going to have fun with to talk about. But it is Friday, Kevin. It's payday. Look, it's payday right now. That's what we're talking about here. We're trying to win tickets. Follow along with what we have to do tonight. Carl Anthony Towns to make 2+ 3-point shots, which means he's got to knock down two of those, and we're going to cash in a ticket. How about this one? Russell, 15 points here. If we're talking about the Lakers, they're full go tonight. Everybody should be working around, including D'Angelo Russell. Just has to get the 15. He should be able to make that happen. And then Mike Conley. Let's go a little bit lower down in tiers. I think he could probably get 5, 6, and 7 assists. All I need him to do tonight is get 4 assists. And how about this? You're right, Kevin. Not plus 143. We're taking down a ticket of plus 162 tonight. Two teams playing for a lot, both full gas. Should be fun. Total in the 230s. Sign me up. I'm cashing this ticket at plus 162.
I can't believe I blew up your spot there, though, in terms of the odds. That's a bad job out of me. That's a bad job out of me. I hate to see that. Man. I'll try not to let it happen again. Maybe we'll coordinate. You know what? We're going to hop on some phone calls then a little bit earlier on and try and get over what everyone's going to be doing here. For mine, the three-point parlays have been working, so why not? Why not continue to have some fun with the deal here? And two point guards that didn't necessarily swap places, but Conley replaced D'Lo. D'Lo ended up back in L.A. Each guy hit two threes. Plus 104. Simple story there. Mike Conley's averaging 2.3 threes per game in Minnesota. D'Angelo Russell averaging 2.7 threes per game with the Los Angeles Lakers. Volumes there, efficiencies there from these two guys. And I think that's a nice way to get involved here with the point guards to knock down some triples. Let's get involved here, though, with this line. The Lakers and the Timberwolves is essentially pick. Total for this game, 232.5. This is such an important game. such an important game. If the Lakers win this, they jump Minnesota in the standings. And then all of a sudden, the tiebreaker, I think, comes in with them in New Orleans. They'd have the same record. I believe the Lakers have the tiebreaker over the Pelicans. A loss here, though, Lakers might be, look, it very well could be enough where they look up at Minnesota and the Pelicans and they can't catch either of those basketball teams and they're deadlocked in the nine, which is, look, I don't want to call it a disaster, but it's obviously a lot harder because you have to win the 9-10 game and then you have to win a road game against the loser of the 7-8 here. Such a critical, critical matchup tonight in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and we are getting a full gas on both sides, so it's nice here. If this game, Kevin, was played in Los Angeles, I'd be much more comfortable with the Los Angeles Lakers. But having said that, I still think the Lakers should be able to get it done. If I'm going to – isn't this what you waited for as a Laker fan? You have a healthy D'Angelo Russell, a healthy LeBron James, a healthy Anthony Davis. But more importantly, you have guys that are now in the starting lineup in Austin Reeves have, when those guys were out, had performed well. It looks like you're finally rounding into form where you have a legitimate bench now. Why? Because your starters are completely healthy. Usually it's me going with the Lakers at home and not on the road. I'm actually going to go with the Los Angeles Lakers tonight because I want to get a look at this team full gas now coming off of a performance that they should be able to double down on.
One, you know, note here, LeBron's points prop is 26.5. What they're kind of right now having you chase the number in that he plays, he goes under, right? They raise it up the next game, he scores more, but they raise it up too much. So you have 26.5. LeBron, though, has played 5 games with the new-look Lakers. He has not scored 27 points in any of those games. And that's not all an efficiency thing. Some of it is. He's had 2 games where he shot quite poorly, but he's been 50% plus in 3 of the 5. But there is also something, again, and we know this with especially superstars, kind of the narratives, this is my spot here, right? Coming off of Anthony Davis carrying the load and giving you 38 against the Chicago Bulls, it would be time for LeBron James to step up and win the newest edition of the most important game of the Los Angeles Lakers season. I don't know if I would want to go over 26.5 at minus 120, but maybe an attempt to climb the ladder. 30-plus points is plus 150. Maybe LeBron can get the outside shot working, which he's not been taking a ton, but if you know, we know how LeBron goes. If he feels it from the outside, it could line up here. We've not seen, again, someone that is averaging 29.2 points per game on the season, we've not seen him with this new iteration of the Lakers get there. Is that the norm, or is that breakout-type performance potentially on the way? To then bring in the Golden State Warriors, who also factor in to this play-in race somewhat here, as they're just a game up on New Orleans, Minnesota, and the Lakers in that loss column, they should have no problem remaining a game up tonight. They're a 16-point favorite. 16-point favorite on the San Antonio Spurs. Total for that game is 241.5.
Yeah, and it's a simple procedure for me, Kevin. One organization not trying to win, one trying to win, but also the Spurs are 6-31 straight up on the road. The Warriors, as we know, play very well at home, 31-8. Yeah. I know this number is extremely high, but I just look for them to bounce them. They might be within 15 points in the first half, but outside of that, I just see the Warriors carrying the day here.
Which is understandable. Team total-wise, and I'm trying to do the math here. I mean, this Warrior number, I mean, are we flirting with like 130.5? Because the number, like on the TV side, that graphic, you know, flashes 238. It's 241.5. I mean, I know you can absolutely hang a gazillion on San Antonio. Plenty. Their last 4 games, they've given up 128, 137, 136, and 130. Yeah. Can you have to play over 130 for the Warriors?
The only problem with that is how many points are they going to be up and do they need points in the fourth quarter? But then usually that bench goes off and Poole ends up going like, hey, I'll go for 40 for fun here in the second half if you guys want to sit this one out. I just look at one of those performances because the Bucks have been in this spot quite a few times against some of these really bad basketball teams. Like, what are the Spurs doing on the road in Golden State? Like, nothing. Like, just get the season over for them. They're going to get rolled.
And they have been rolled in these games. Like, to your point, right, there's been a couple of spots where you look at these San Antonio numbers and you go, all right, come on, this is an NBA. No. They got 13 from New Orleans, smashed. 19 from Milwaukee, smashed. 8.5 Washington, smashed.
They got Boston gave him 16 at a hook. Smash. They're not covering any of these games.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah.
So it's an understandable point by you certainly here to bring in some of the East Coast teams, the Cavs and the Knicks play. This is actually, I would listen to an argument that this is the second most important game on the slate. Maybe you could try and climb it up. Here's why. No Julius Randle. He's out for 2 weeks. This is, it's not locked yet, but odds are this is the 4-5 game here, and Randle might miss time in that series. Cavs are a 4.5-point favorite, total 222. This is an important one to keep your eye on here because, again, this looks like a postseason preview.
It does. And is this one of those games where you just say, because we try to take a look at the elements of the game and how they play in. I think the Knicks are more, you know, importantly focused on when do we get Randle back as opposed to can we win a game in Cleveland tonight. But having said that, that line still looks a little bit cheap here because the Knicks without Randle, most people, that's unbettable for me. I can't take that. They're not even at home in this game. They're actually traveling on the road. So when you're trying to line it up, what makes some sense for me, Kevin, if I'm looking in the points prop market, Jalen Brunson, why? Because there's going to be an extra 25 shots to go around and he's supposed to be the one that's going to focus in. Or is it one of those where, well, if you take Brunson here at his 25.5 points, don't Cleveland know as well that now the focal point of the offense probably is going to be Jalen Brunson and we'll run an extra guy at him when he has the basketball? Those are the things you have to think about. For myself, it looks too easy to take the Cleveland Cavaliers, but for myself, I might fall into that trap. I'd rather have tonight, Kevin, Jalen Brunson over 25.5 points than Donovan Mitchell over 28.5 points. There's a chance that the Knicks might get smoked in this game, but also a chance here for me that Brunson knows, like, hey, throw efficiency out the window. I got to shoot 20-plus times tonight just to keep our ball club in this one. I like Brunson's props tonight. I think he has the chance to go off without Julius Randle.
So here is the really tricky thing. Do you know 77 games, Donnie, this year for the Knicks? Do you know how many Julius Randle has missed?
No.
Zero. Yeah. Zero games. Shout out to Julius Randle, by the way, right? Mm-hmm. That's obviously a rarity in today's game. But we don't have sample sizes. No, and that's not a the Brunson thing makes all the sense in the world. My point is we don't how much does RJ Barrett step up here, right? His prop's 20.5. What about Emmanuel Quickley? Is Emmanuel Quickley finding himself a big workload all of a sudden there? Those are the kind of things that we have to see. I quickly want to just bring up here, you got a game tonight between the Nets and the Hawks. Very relevant as well for the Eastern Conference standings. The Grizzlies and the Clippers. Memphis is supposed to be closer to full strength. They're 6.5-point favorites in the game as well. The Blazers are also catching 14.5. Again, they stink out loud. Clown show, joke, embarrassing. Lillard, just grow up, request a trade. And then lastly, Oklahoma City goes to Indiana as a 2.5-point road favorite. The question for that game is the question of the same. Who is actually playing? SGA, Tyrese Halliburton, I think both are going to be absent for that game. We get over now to the Final Four, the men's side of it. UConn against Miami, FAU and San Diego State. Who is going to advance to the national championship game? We break it down next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Final Four time here. Let's get after it. San Diego State, FAU, UConn, and Miami. We go in order. SDSU, FAU is where it all begins. The Aztecs, a 2.5-point favorite over the Owls. Total, 131.5. Massive game here. One of these teams playing for the national championship. Certainly not what we anticipated. Even if you expected madness in March, we did not expect one of these two teams to have the opportunity to fully cut down the Nets. But here we are. When you line this matchup up, the 5 seed in San Diego State, the 9 seed in Florida Atlantic, where's the value?
Throw the seeds out. I'm going to take the dog in this one, Kevin. I'll take the plus 2.5 points here in this game and maybe take a look at that plus 128 there on the money line. But I feel this game is going to come down to a possession or two. I'd like to have that 2.5 in my pocket. Now, what it comes down to also, Kevin, I think the matchup basically is, right, FAU's offense versus San Diego State's defense. If you look at FAU, top 25 in the country, but San Diego State's defense, Kevin, top 5 in the country at defending. Here's the thing that always gives me a little bit of pause, because keep in mind, once again, you're going to hear this ad nauseum. You're not playing in a smaller gym or a smaller arena. I can't get over the fact that FAU, Kevin, plays in about a 3,000-seat gym. Now they're going to play in an 80,000-seat football stadium. Having said that, they're a very good three-point shooting team, but also San Diego State on the defensive end, Kevin, number two in the nation at defending the three-point line at under 28%. You're really going to have to fight those shooting lines and the sight lines there in this arena and also fight the San Diego State defense. But having said that, I just have a little bit more trust in FAU, which is so wild to say. Who would have thought that before the tournament started? Like, hey, by the way, if FAU even gets to a Final Four, you're going to actually think they can actually win and move to a national championship game? I actually think they can here. And the one guy that's going to have to do it is Jonell Davis. If you look at his stat lines, Kevin, for at least the last dozen games, he's always double digits or higher. If we look at the FanDuel Sportsbook coming into this game here in the Final Four, it's listed at 13.5. So sometimes we talk about Kevin. Do you think he's guaranteed to get 13.5 points? No, he's not. He's playing a very good defensive team. But if it's one of those bets that, Kevin, no matter what happens, it seems like you're always in the ballpark. 10 points with 6 minutes to go. 8 points with 12 minutes to go. You have a legitimate chance to take that down. And also, if you're trying to take a look at what makes sense at the end of a game, who's going to have the basketball in their hands, how about an 86% free throw shooter to maybe put you over the top if you have 12 points with about a minute to go and they have the lead, knocks down a couple free throws to cash that in. This is the game that is the true toss-up here of the Final Four, but I find myself always wanting and backing now FAU, Kevin.
Yeah, I think that's understandable here. To then attack the total, San Diego State has played 12 consecutive unders. 12 straight unders. Obviously, that includes every single game in this tournament here. Total 131.5. It still could just... It's one of those spots where you might not be able to set a total low enough when San Diego State gets involved, which could make player props tricky. The trickiest player prop to me... We'll get to one on the FAU side of it that I'm interested in. But it's Matt Bradley. Matt Bradley is the leading scorer for San Diego State. And Matt Bradley has been horrendous for three consecutive games. Against Charleston, the opening game of this tournament, he went 7 of 15, scored 17 points. Solid. Against Furman, 3 of 10, 10 points. Bad. And that was the last time it even looked like he knew what he was doing out on the floor. Against Alabama, 2 of 9, 6 points. Creighton, 1 of 8, 2 points. I backed Bradley in that game against Creighton, and at times, as a gambler, right, we can always turn anything into a bad beat. We can turn anything into a bad beat. Ah, what a bad beat. The highest score, the leading scorer on San Diego State's getting benched for the entire second half almost. No bad beat. I would have benched him too. He's been that bad, and that is why I think the Bradley props are so difficult, because if you go through his season, right, you do not find Bradley putting up multiple games in a row going under his prop, 11.5, 12.5. Usually players of this caliber, right, that have this type of reputation can bounce back, and Bradley fits that description. But the biggest problem I now have, Donnie, with the play of Butler and the play of Trammell, the two lead guys now for San Diego State in this tournament, the benching of Bradley is more than justified. He has played 19 minutes against Alabama. He played 20 minutes against Creighton. You know how many fouls he had against Creighton? None. No foul trouble. He just didn't deserve to be out there on the court. It's the Final Four. This is I got to go out my guy. Nope. I've got other guys that I'm going to go out with here. I know that people usually want a strong take on do you like it or do you not, but it's one of the reasons why I think the FAU play also just makes sense here. San Diego State's leading scorer has been atrocious for a while and is now not even factoring in minutes-wise as much as we are used to.
Yeah, we're trying to find those outside factors, which question, like we talked about, like Alabama, when their top player doesn't play well, they get bounced out of the tournament. Still amazing. It shows you how much depth San Diego State has and how much they still believe in each other, particularly on the defensive end, where one of your better players can score 2 points in an Elite Eight game and you can still move on. That's pretty impressive. If you also flip it back over to FAU, Kevin, how about the 7'1" guy, Vlad Golden? Now, the reason why I bring that up is sometimes you take a look at games and you say, where can I start to find myself? 14 points in the last game that he had going up against Kansas State. But more importantly, Kevin, take a look at the last two games that he played against Tennessee and Kansas State, two very physical ball clubs, one foul and one foul. If you have a 7-foot center that can give you close to 30 minutes in a game, Kevin, and not being in foul trouble, and as a matter of fact, just looking at his game logs, Kevin, he hasn't fouled out the entire season here while playing mid-25s, you know, close to 30 minutes every single game. That is massive, because a lot of times when you look at one of these teams like FAU coming from what we perceive as a smaller conference, hey, you can't get in foul trouble and play. He doesn't get in foul trouble. And also just having that sense of, I went 6-for-11 from the field last game. I had, 13 total rebounds and only had one foul? That is massive stuff here. FAU does it from guard play, and it's always nice to have, because sometimes when you look at some of these mid-major programs, Kevin, or those group of five teams, like their big man is 6'5", right? He rebounds really well. He's athletic. No, they have a true 7-footer that can actually move.
Which is why I like Golden over the 8.5. If you look far in this tournament here, genuine bigs against San Diego State. Name's tough. Barzovic, best I got for you. On Charleston, gave you 12. Bediako for Alabama had himself a big second half. He was able to get to double digits there. And then you saw Kalkbrenner lead the way with 17 for Creighton. This is a spot for Golden. As a true 7'1", San Diego State has Mensa, who's 6'10", and he's going to be able to hang. Ladie is 6'9". Everybody else is 6'7" or shorter. Look, quite frankly, 6'9" is tall, not the 7'1". 6'10" isn't that tall when you're trying to guard 7'1" there. Golden at 8.5, coming off of the game that he had against K-State with 14 points. I like where your head's at trying to back him in this spot. We then get to UConn and Miami. Of course, a big game for you. We know the future's out there. But what do you think when you see the matchup here? 5.5-point spread. The Huskies are favored by total 149.5. We talk trends at the top of the show. UConn is 14-0-1 against the spread when playing a team that is not in the Big East. Miami, 9-2 against the spread when they are listed as an underdog, which they certainly are in this matchup.
The thing I like about it here is you would never know it when you look at UConn here, about 200 in the country in tempo, because if you look just in the tournament alone, if you just tuned in, hey, didn't watch UConn much this year, Kevin, 87, 70, 88, and 82. And then you look at the game against Miami coming up, who they don't mind going tempo for tempo with you. I think we're going to get some points scoring. But again, you have to take that thought process, Kevin, out of your head that's saying, hey, you know what? We're not in an 18,000 seat arena, which we're used to playing in. We're now going to go into a giant football stadium. And how does that translate? And also, Kevin, keep in mind, maybe get a little bit more scoring possibly in the Monday night game because they're used to playing in that big environment. And also, these aren't UConn, you might be able to say, is a blue blood, multiple national champions, but everybody else there, Kevin, there's going to be a bit of nerves, man. When you jump that ball up with how many people are out there and the flash bulbs are going off, do you have your A game right away or do you have to settle in, which is going to be pretty key. When you take a look at UConn, number 3 overall in efficiency in the nation on offense. That's tremendous. But they also counter that with being 11th overall on defense. They win at both ends of the court. Now, Miami on offense is guard-centric here. They have two fantastic veteran guards that can lead you to victory and have done so. And I love Jim Larrañaga as a head coach. And one of the things I'm basically trying to beat around the bush is I'm glad that I don't have to actually take the -5.5 where UConn has to win by 6-plus points in this game. If we've shown anything for Miami, they have the moxie to come back. They should have been the doors blown off them against the Texas Longhorns, down double digits with about 10 minutes ago, and stormed all the way back and ended up winning that game by 6-7 points. But also, landing in the high 80s against a very good defensive Texas team. I do think Miami is going to be able to score, but to be honest with you, UConn is the better team. Here's what you need out of Miami. Maybe another collapse out of UConn, which I don't know if is coming. And the joke for me has been with UConn, if you watch them play, it's like line changes in hockey. It seems like they get better all over the place. Their backups knocking down 45%+ of the 3-point shots. They're just too good. I can't see them slipping up in this spot, Kevin. And instead of saying, I like Miami because they're a really good dog team, I like your stat much better. UConn doesn't lose and certainly covers when they play teams out of conference.
They do. And here's what I like, though. Miami, in their games as an underdog, 60% of the time the game goes over. UConn at a conference, over 60% of the time the game goes over. Give me the over in the basketball game. Let's talk about Hawkins. Let's talk about Sonogo. So Miami, right, defensively, is the reason why they were not expected to go on this run, outside of the top 100 on KenPom. If you look at the schedule here for UConn, right, Big East-wise, who did they play within range, right? Within about 20 spaces in terms of defensive efficiency. You would take the Providence games, you would take the Villanova games, and the Gonzaga games as well. Jordan Hawkins has lit up these teams. Absolutely lit them up. His prop is 16.5. He's over that in 5 of 6, averaging 20 points per game in this spot. Sanogo, this is a more difficult sell because it doesn't really make sense. If I told you, so UConn is elite defensively, right? And if I told you that Nigel Pack struggles against elite defenses, I like his unders, you'd say, perfect. Makes all the sense in the world. Sanogo has been awful against bad defenses. That doesn't make sense. That's not comfortable, but that's the case, Donnie. His prop is 17.5 in a 6-game sample size, 3 against Providence, 2 against Nova, and 1 against Gonzaga. He has never scored 18. He scored 11 or less in 5 out of the 6 games. Now, I might just leave the Sanogo stuff alone because, again, it's a little harder to justify Sanogo can't play well against bad defenses. I like his under. Even though that's what it says, I do like Hawkins here, though, who really has been able to get loose and active against defenses of Miami's caliber.
And for me, if Miami's going to win this basketball game, they're going to have to lean on their guard play here. It's going to be pretty tough to score. A lot of athletic bigs there for UConn. So if I'm going there, I'm actually going to take Nigel Pack, 13.5 at a minus 122. If they're going to be in this basketball game, it's because he's going to be very good. Take a look at the 4 games that he's played, Kevin, in the NCAA tournament. Against Drake, 21 points. Against Indiana, 12 points. How about Houston? One of the best, if not the best, defensive teams in the country, Kevin. 26 points. Why? Because he splashed 7 3-point shots. If we're not getting a ton of looks down low, the 3-point shots are going to have to fall. And if Miami wants to keep it close, it's going to be Nigel Pack. It's going to have at least 14, 15 points to keep them around.
Nigel Pack has been the leading scorer of that 3-man group there between him, Jordan Miller, and Isaiah Wong, despite the fact that he is at 20-1 in the market and compared to Isaiah Wong's 12-1. That is definitely something to keep an eye on there. And as well as that Hawkins-Sanogo breakdown, you might say, oh, should I bet Hawkins at a plus 270? If UConn wins in the national championship game with what's waiting on the other side, I think Sanogo has the big national championship game. I think the buyback on Sanogo could be the angle. We hope we have the opportunity to execute that, though. Over tonight in that Iowa-South Carolina game. Enjoy the action. Before you go anywhere, folks, make sure you listen up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, final segment of the week here for the early line. And what a week it was. SiriusXM Channel 159 right here on the Sports Grid Network. Donnie, Kevin is always powering you through from 7 to 9 a.m. before we hand it over to Ben Stevens in the morning after and the rest of your Sports Grid programming. A huge card tonight in the NBA. Looking forward to that. Also, Kevin and I looking to double down on our same game parlays here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, both picking up wins yesterday. Feel very comfortable tonight in the LA Lakers game. We'll watch that. And also the Final Four. Yeah, tomorrow night the men's take place, but tonight all eyes are focused on the women's game here. Massive matchups all the way through. That should be sensational. Major League Baseball opening day was yesterday. So when we talk about so many things colliding at once in the sports landscape, it's really happening now. Now, as a Philadelphia Phillies fan, watching that game yesterday, sitting back on, man, this is great. DeGrom leaves town. We still end up having to face him on the mound, and we're up 5-0, only to lose that game. So here's what I like. You get right back at it the next day in Major League Baseball. It's fun, right? Wrong. Listen up. You know your boy DRS, I sit back and I like to be commissioner of as many leagues as possible to try to fix things and make it more comfortable for the fans and a more enjoyable overall experience. Major League Baseball has been doing this for decades here. For some reason, we can play on opening day, but you can't play on day number 2 because I guess the players are exhausted from playing one game after leisurely taking place in spring training where they get a couple innings in and golf the rest of the afternoon. Look, I understand back in the day where, hey, the biggest crowds of the season are going to be on opening day. We can't risk that, and we have to take day 2 off so those people can still come back and watch the game and pay their money for parking and concessions and fill up the ballpark. But there's way too many instances here. Like, what are we doing down in Texas right now? When I look at the Philadelphia Phillies, they're playing in a dome in Texas, but they can't play on day number two. That makes no sense to me at this point. When you're talking about building momentum, especially from opening day, when every single fan base is happy, you either have one team that won, they can't wait to see their team play again, or one team that lost, and you can't wait to see how they get back the next day. Why would you stop the momentum on day two of Major League Baseball season? Ridiculous, Rob Manfred. Get out there and fix this problem for next year. Stay tuned now to The Morning After, coming up with Ben Stevens right here on The Grid.